My guest today is Leslie Priscilla. She's the founder of Latinx Parenting, who's here to talk with me today about childhood, culture, and the rights of children within the home. I'm Whitney Goodman. Welcome to the Calling Home podcast. I'm glad you're here. There really isn't any one-size-fits-all way to raise a family, and parenting styles can really vary depending on the culture. That said, I think what sometimes happens is certain harmful parenting behaviors can end up being excused or brushed off because it's quote-unquote part of the culture, which isn't necessarily true. And as you've heard me say before, growing up and realizing that your needs weren't met as a child is really hard. And it's especially difficult if you're expected to take care of your parent when you're older, even if you feel discomfort around this person as an adult. I really love this conversation that Leslie and I have because we talk all about the overlap of culture, parenting, childhood, how children are looked at in different parts of society and our world and cultures. And I think you're really going to love this episode. So, you know, what keeps you up at night? Why have you made this your life's mission?
Well, right now, my toddlers are currently what keep me up at night because they come into my bed. But
same.
outside of that, it's been just knowing that there's kids that are struggling in their homes. And I think one extreme of this was like the case of Gabriel Fernandez, which if people were not familiar, was a really, really terrible child abuse case that ended up with Gabriel being killed by his parents. And so that's kind of the extreme. And that's not the case, obviously, everywhere. But I know that there are children that are maybe experiencing levels of disconnection that vary from their parents. And I happen to know the consequences of that disconnection because I was that child, right? I was a child who was disconnected from her parents. I was a child who didn't really feel that nurturing relationship because my mother was stressed out. She was a Mexican immigrant who came here at 15 years old, didn't really have the tools, the resources, the inner capacity really to be able to offer to me the nurturance and the modeling of what respect actually was. And so it's not just for the kids that are out there. It's really for the kid that is still in here. I don't necessarily see it as it's something that keeps me up at night, but it's really something that I know that I'll be working on the rest of my life.
I love your dedication to this topic and to this population. I can really feel it through the content that you write. I also write about a lot of the same things, you know, about showing children respect and treating children like humans. And I'm wondering why you feel like there's still some pushback on that.
Yeah, there's a lot there. I think that one of the biggest values that we hold in my culture specifically, and this is the Latino culture, so anybody of like the Latin American diaspora, is this value of respect. And so respect oftentimes is seen as, you know, it's a non-negotiable, like you have to respect the elders, the adults in your family. And oftentimes that gets convoluted with obedience, right? So what it means to respect your parents to the parent sometimes means you have to obey what I say because I am the parent. And this didn't just, you know, happen. This is something that has been passed down by other systemic power dynamics that have trickled into our families. And so I started getting really curious about the ways that colonization has impacted our families because, again, not everybody has the experience of having an immigrant parent, right? So what is the immigration experience? How does that impact the parent-child dynamic? How does the poverty that my mom grew up with impact her capacity to be able to parent me in ways that now I'm able to parent because I don't necessarily have that same struggle of having to go through that as a child, right? And so what I think is the challenge oftentimes is that because we know that our parents have sacrificed so much in order to give us in this middle generation, this generation that's kind of straddling two cultures, everything that we have is this idea that if I start to question my childhood, if I start to really reflect and think about all the ways that my needs went unmet, that feels disrespectful, right? And so it goes back to this idea of, am I respecting my parents? Am I respecting my culture, my people? If I choose something different for my children, does that mean that I have to abandon the values of my culture? Does that mean that I have to abandon the ways of my family, right? And so when I became a parent 12 years ago, I started kind of looking at that and I was like, I don't know how to be in connection and in relationship with this child without feeling like I'm slighting my parents, right? And so even as she was growing and she became a toddler, there was the suggestion to spank her, the suggestion to punish in ways that did not feel good to me, because I had the privilege, the ability to kind of understand by that point, because I had been working with kids, the impact of disconnection on brain development, right? Like in simplest terms, I was like, I know that in order for kids to learn, to be well, mentally, emotionally, et cetera, they have to have a connection to their parents. And so my parents didn't necessarily know that. So they're coming in, you know, with their opinions about what I should be doing with my kids. And my telling them, actually, I'm going to do things differently, created a lot of discomfort in me, feeling like I was being a disrespectful child, right? And so now my wounds, my childhood wounds are being stimulated. I'm feeling like a bad daughter, not only a bad daughter, but a bad parent, because I'm not raising my kids in the way that my parents want me to raise them, right? And so it took a lot of gaining the confidence, I think, to say, okay, actually, it's okay, it's safe for me to be able to build a new blueprint that is not even not a part of the culture, but is a part of the more rooted parts of my culture that have to do with indigenous values, with honoring children, with treating children as human beings.
Yeah, I want to focus on that piece of culture, because I don't know if you know this, but my mom is a first generation American. She's Cuban. And so I did grow up in a Hispanic family. My mom's child was profoundly different from mine, you know, socioeconomically, culturally, all these ways. We live in completely different worlds, you know, and I don't see culture as being these like negative things, you know, like hitting your children, things like that. To me, that, like you said, it is a result of colonization, of trauma, of people not having the right resources. And I get confused when people try to like say, well, it's part of my culture, you know, and you can't shame that. And I'm wondering if you come up against that as well.
Absolutely. I mean, the whole movement to end chancla culture, right? So I've kind of coined this term, what is chancla culture? And
I love that.
Yeah. When you look up Latina, Latinx media, you'll see the glorification of this sandal, right? Of this chancla that's being thrown at kids, and usually 100%. It's being wielded by a mom. And so that's really interesting to know too, that the mom is now seen as this disciplinarian that, you know, and it's like, okay, well, where's the dad, right? So we have a lot of conversations within the Latinx parenting community about these things, but really the chancla has been the entry into this conversation, where why is it that we are so prone to celebrating this, I guess, power over children in this way, right, is what it is. So why is that so acceptable? It's this idea of honor your mother and father, right, which comes from religious intonations and things like that. But we bring that in, we've adapted these things into our families, and now we're wielding chanclas. And honestly, not so much my generation anymore, but there's other forms of chancletazos, what I call chancletazos, that are emotional, right? And so it's anything that's related to power over dynamics and authoritarianism in families, right? And it's also internalized. And so the way that I believe that I deserve violence, and where does that come from? So colonization obviously has had tremendous impact to our families. The stress that our families are under, that they're currently under, right? Because there's marginalization, there's exploitation in our families. And you don't often see parenting people kind of talking about those things, right? The ways that these power dynamics manifest in our culture. Mind you, childism is not something that is just a part of Latinx families, right? What I call adult supremacy is not something that is just a part of Latinx families. It's really a global issue in the way that children are treated, and honestly, just dishonored, right, throughout the world, is not just a Latinx problem. But I think when I talk about chancla culture, it's how is it expressed in our families? You know, how have we been raised to believe whether we deserve violence or we don't deserve violence? And that was really my experience as I started working with parents over a decade ago, is that a lot of the parents that I work with, the Spanish-speaking community, really believes like, I deserved to be hit, right? I was bad. I was a bad kid. And that was really difficult for me to hear, because I knew in my training, I'm like, no. Like, kids actually don't deserve any form of violence. Yeah, they deserve to have parents that are confident in the guidance and in the limit setting and are able to do that in a way that's respectful and in a way that's not disconnecting of the parent-child dynamic. But violence, no, we actually don't deserve that. And to look at the content that's created about La Chancla, to me, it's a normalization, right? So this is what is normal. This is what is a part of our culture. If you take La Chancla away from us, you're taking, you know, this way of being in family away from us. And it's like, well, maybe that's actually not a part of our culture. Maybe that was an adaptation into our families so that our children and our parents could survive, right? So we now have to exert power over children because we have all of these other power holders exerting power over us.
Mm-hmm. But it does persist as such like a cultural phenomenon, because I know in my generation, among like my 13 cousins on my mom's side, none of us were like hit with the chancla, right? Like it was something that was not continued in the generation, but they still send memes and videos about it. And it's still part of like the family discourse in a way. And it's interesting because it's like, it's child abuse, you know, when you really step back from it, but there is this normalization that happens of like, no, this is something that we do and it's funny and it's part of our culture.
Yeah. In the Ending Chancla Culture workshop that I teach, I play this video and it has like millions of views on YouTube, and it's La Chancla, right? It's like literally on like a pedestal, like glowing and shiny, and it's like La Chancla, you know? And so it's meant to be funny. Like those videos, those memes, like the intention is for those to make you laugh, and they make us laugh because it's honestly for us one of the first times that we feel seen in media, right? So it's like, oh my gosh, it's almost like a relief. Like, oh, finally, there's some kind of representation about the way that I was raised, about the way that I grew up. And so that sense of belonging that we gain from that is not necessarily a bad thing, right? It's not a bad thing to feel a connection to culture, to feel some kind of resonance in that moment when you're looking at those memes or those videos. But I do ask people to think a little bit deeper. If that video was created and that was not between a parent and child, but between an adult, child of an elder throwing a chancla at an elder, or if it was a male partner throwing a chancla to their female partner because they didn't like the way that they cooked dinner, whatever it is, right? We have to think about these things a little bit deeper and say, why is it okay when it's about kids, right? Why is it okay when it's about exerting power and dominance over a child who has less power than you? Kids, you know, and bell hooks said this, kids are the only marginalized group that do not have the ability to organize, right? They can't form unions amongst themselves right, on the playground. Right. Like we can't. And so as adults, like we have a responsibility to be able to really support their advocacy for themselves, for their bodily autonomy, for their right to live healthy, happy, wholesome lives. It's hard for us as parents in general, like me having the privilege of being a light-skinned Latina, of having the resources that I have, it's hard for me. So thinking about a family, you know, like Gabriel Fernandez's, who was on welfare, his mom had like, you know, so much trauma growing up. So it's degrees of hardship. And so a lot of the stressors that Latinx families specifically are holding make it extra difficult to kind of release those power dynamics in the family, right? And so I'm kind of here inviting people to really think about these things deeper, to recognize that we do have the power to be able to shift the narrative about whether we deserve violence or not, and where that violence is still coming from, and how we can organize to kind of make it easier on ourselves to be in connection.
Mm-hmm. You're reminding me of this quote that I can never remember who said it, but it's from a book that I read, that when a child has to choose between saying they were bad or that their parents were abusive, they're always going to go with, I was bad. And that feels so much easier and so much better to say.
Yeah, absolutely. I think as I was growing up, I was like, you know, I think about my mom when I was 5 and I'm like, your parents could do no wrong, right? You're just like, I love my parents. Like anything that they do, that is the blueprint. Like that is the standard of what a mom should do or what a dad should do. And so there was not this questioning, I think, until I was in my adolescence. And I think a lot of adolescents come to this place where we're becoming independent from our parents and we're really starting to kind of reflect. But at the time, as a child, like you don't want to admit that your needs are not getting met, right? Or you don't even really know what those needs are if there's no vocabulary around those needs, if there's no vocabulary around the feelings that you're having, right? It's just about the behavior, and the behavior has an impact to your parents' reactions and responses. And so at that surface level, it's kind of hard to know what vocabulary to even use. You know, I don't like it when you hit me, it hurts my feelings. Like that would never have been something I was able to say as a child, right? And so I think there's a lot of disempowerment in that way.
Yeah. And I think people, when they reflect on their childhood, they think like, no, I liked my parents. I was choosing to be around them. Everything they did was fine. But really that's a biological, like, survival instinct, right? To stay close to your parents, even when they are abusive, you will defend and cling to your parents because you know on a level that you cannot live without them. And so it's not really a choice.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think once we get to the point where we are reflecting on these things, it feels really uncomfortable. Like, it feels weird to be like, well, I know that they sacrificed all these things for me. I know that my mom migrated here when she was 15. I know that, you know, all of these things happened even before I was born. And so I'm trying to balance this compassion that I have for them with this compassion that I have for my childhood experiences. And that balance is really hard to strike sometimes, right? So anytime on social media where I'm like calling for accountability of some of the things that our parents did, it's like, you're being too harsh, right? And sometimes where I'm like, no, let's be really compassionate and really sweet and, you know, considerate of these experiences, people are like, you're, you know, justifying abuse. And I'm like, no, 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 no.
I get the same exact responses. So yeah. I get that. Yeah.
And it's just where people are, you know, like I don't take it personally because I'm just like, you're not going to be where I am. Forgiveness is another thing. Like, do I have to forgive my parents? And I'm like, that's such a personal journey and such a personal choice that I will never tell someone they have to forgive some of the experiences that happened in their childhoods, because that's your journey.
Right. And it's so rooted in black and white thinking, right? That like, if we question anything about our parents, it means that they were bad and all the sacrifices that they made are canceled out. When you can have parents that immigrated, that worked 10 jobs, that did all of these things for you and still say, that was great. I love that they did that. And there were some consequences to that that harmed me. And like, I feel like that's really the dance, like a lot of adult children and especially adult children of immigrants are navigating, is like, how can I learn to hold space for both of those realities?
Yeah. I mean, you end up finding yourself in a place where the expectation is, and I'm experiencing this now in my mid-30s, that, you know, you're going to be the one to take care of your parents, right? Because yes, there is really no retirement fund. There's no, you know, so it's like, I am not just mothering, like I'm not just parenting my own kids. I'm not just parenting my own inner child. Like, I'm also having to step into the role of caretaker for my parents, right? And so this would be so much easier if we still lived in villages and the distribution of that, of the labor that would take was, you know, but it's just me and my sister, right? And my sister's in New York. And so really it's like, it's here. And I think people kind of underestimate the impacts of that, right? And how that adds another stressor, another element to just kind of moving through life. And yeah, I think that, you know, in this work, it's something that I'm really hoping that people will begin to consider, to make the conditions different, right? To really have something different, I think, in the generations to come where our parents are not experiencing this degree of stressor.
Right. So I think something that both of us talk about is, you know, adult children and their parents having relationships in adulthood. And I want to read one of the posts that I found on your Instagram that I thought was great. You said, you should know that if you're mean to your kids and emotionally unavailable consistently throughout their childhood, they probably won't want to be around you very much or at all when they grow to have the choice. Don't dig your own grave with the shovel of your own unexamined wounds. I imagine that that is hard for some people to integrate and hear. What is your experience when you say things like this?
Yeah, I wrote that when I was experiencing a lot of expectation from my mom to kind of be a space holder, right? And in my body, right, I've like learned ways to kind of reconnect to the sensations that I experience around people as a way to protect what I call my inner niña from receiving harm, right? And so because of that, I'm hypersensitive now to when my mom is asking of things from me, that I feel a lot of resistance that I wouldn't necessarily feel from a friend or from somebody who I feel really close to or who has been nurturing for me in my life, because deep inside there's still hurt, right? Deep inside there's still just this niña who feels scared to have to be the parents caretaker again, right? Because I think as children, especially children of immigrants and immigrants who have had significant trauma in their lives way before we were born, right? And who probably had parents who also had significant trauma in their lives. We are put in a position so frequently to be emotional caretakers to them. And so I, as a child, was heavily parentified. My parents split when I was about 9 years old. My dad was not around after that. And so then it was just me kind of holding space for my mom, right? And so it didn't really matter what my feelings were. It was just kind of centered around, you know, the experience that she was having. And so I now, as an adult, don't like that.
Totally fair.
I guess it's like this, the simplest way that I can put it is like, I don't want to be that for this person that had never considered my needs, really, you know, and like still doesn't to this day sometimes.
Well, now you have the power to say that.
Exactly. And that's still uncomfortable, right? Like, it's like, shoot, I wish I could be, you know, like my best friend and her mom, who are best friends together, and have that experience. And I have to really think about what's good for me at this time, you know, like what is okay for me to receive and to not receive, and learn how to set boundaries around that. And so when I wrote that, it was really just this feeling of like, you know, I tell my daughter's 11 and a half, and I tell her, I really, really want to make sure that when you get a phone call from me, when you are an adult, that it's not the feeling that I get when I open my phone and it's my mom calling, right? Which is one of dread and contraction and tightness in my body. I want my daughter to see me calling and say, yay, it's my mom. I can't wait to talk to her. And that is not something that I have the experience of, right? Which honestly has made me that much more committed to parenting in ways that are honoring of my kids and are, you know, not projecting of my childhood wounds. It gets really hard sometimes, obviously, because I don't have a blueprint for it. I'm creating it. I'm kind of like flying the airplane as I'm building it in a way. But yeah, I think it's really hard to kind of navigate that inner child, those experiences, and now your parent having, you know, their own internal experiences and healing journeys.
Totally. And I think it's commendable and admirable that you're doing that within your own family and, you know, walking the walk while you're also talking about this stuff. And I guess I just come back to like what you wrote here, I think is actually maybe a radical belief in a lot of Hispanic families. You know, this idea that if you don't treat each other with respect, if your parent is harmful to you, you have a right to separate or to set boundaries, because there are high levels of like obedience, you know, and ties to the family that should come without question. That's my experience, at least, you know.
Yeah, I completely agree. There's this expectation that we're going to be able to sustain collectivist values when there hasn't really been this collectivist perspective of children.
That's so well put. Yeah.
Right. So children are not necessarily included in the decisions that a family makes. You just, you know, I remember moving out of my childhood home at 9 years old, and I was not told that I was moving that day. Like, there was just no communication about it. Suddenly the next day we were living somewhere else, and I was like, whoa. So when those experiences are happening, and I asked my mom actually recently, I was like, why wasn't there that communication? Like, why didn't you tell me? And she was like, I was just so out of it at that time. Yeah. Like, I couldn't even hold space for myself, much less a child, right? And so, but it would have been nice, right? Like, it would have been nice to be communicated with. It would have been nice to be included. And there are some families, unfortunately, that actively don't include children in the conversation or in their worlds, you know? And so there is this expectation where it's like, you're going to be collectivist with me, but I don't have to be that with you, right? Like, it's about my needs as an individual, and I can shut you out, but don't you dare shut me out as you grow older, because I'm your parent.
Right. And we sort of are expecting children to learn like collectivist values and expecting them to deliver on them in adulthood while not teaching them or modeling that for them while they're children.
100%. Exactly.
That's really enlightening. I haven't thought about it from that perspective before. The other thing that I've seen you talking about lately on social media that I wanted to chat with you about was like this idea of men in Latin American families or in Hispanic families leaving the family entirely, starting new families. You're really the first person that I've heard speak about this. And it was something that I spoke with clients, you know, I'm practicing in Miami for 10 years. It happened a lot. And I'd love to hear about like why you decided to speak about that.
Yeah. So I grew up with a dad who had a father who had a family across town and then my dad's family. My dad himself has five children from three different women, right? So he was with me the longest out of all of my siblings. And so the more I started talking to other people over the last 10 years, I was like, wow, this is such a common experience. Like, I didn't realize how normalized this was in our families, in our culture. And so the more that I've talked to people, the more I've realized that religion honestly has had a lot to do with it. Like, we have, as women, become subservient in a way, right? Like, we're dependent on men. And men have known that. Like, men have been like, this is fine. As long as I can financially take care of this, you know, this woman and this child and this woman over here and this child, then it's okay. And then at some point, they were not able to, but they were still doing the thing. They were still like procreating with multiple people. And I think I'm feeling hopeful, though, because over the last 3 years, I've held something that I've called the Brown Fatherhood Series to kind of bring some of those things up, and not to disparage the men in our families, because there's been a lot of trauma that they've experienced. I mean, you look back 500 years and the men in my ancestry witnessed terrible things happening to their families, right? And so this idea of machismo, or like the centering of men, was also an adaptation that sprung from colonization, at least in Latinx families. Patriarchy comes into that because we were matriarchal, actually. A lot of indigenous cultures, and still, because, you know, indigenous cultures are not 500 years ago, we're here now. But there's matriarchy. And so the patriarchy was a shift that happened as a result of colonization. And so that's just one expression of it, right? Where the man can kind of go and spread his seed everywhere and there's really no consequence to it. Meanwhile, the children and the women struggle and experience that hardship. And so I wanted to bring that to light because it is such a common experience among us. And I want men in particular to look at that and really reconsider the way that they approach relationship and the way that they approach raising sons in particular. And I have two daughters and a son, and I'm not going to be shy about, you know, the history of my family, because I want that to be out in the open, right? When I brought this up actually in a family chat with my cousins, so I have about 27 cousins in a family chat on my dad's side. And I asked about this. I was like, you know, does anybody know any more details about this other family that our abuelo had? Like, can you share more? One of my cousins, who's a conservative judge in Colima, said, you know, we shouldn't talk about that. Like, let's just leave that. Let's just leave that behind. He has sons, right? He's like, let's just leave that behind. Like, we don't talk about that in the family. Basically, like, we don't talk about Bruno for anybody who's watched Encanto. Like, that's not something that we talk about. You know, and there's so much of that in our families where it's like, why bring it up? And it's like, because we have to learn from it, because those were real experiences, because women were hurt, because that hurt was passed down to children, because there were impacts to it, right? And so I thought it was very interesting that even in 2023, there's people saying, oh, no, let's not talk about that, right? In my generation. And so it just kind of shows you like how much more work there is to do.
Yeah. What do you think the impact of that has been, whether that was on you personally or the people that you've heard from who have dealt with this?
Yeah, there were so many comments under that post. I think we had over 600 people sharing their experiences.
Yeah, I saw there were so many comments.
Yeah, and the DMs came in. I mean, the stories are some of them are really, really bad, to the point where, you know, it's like violence and abuse, like all of these really terrible things. And so those have very clear impacts to the people that are experiencing it. I think for me, it wasn't, I think, until, you know, sometime within the last 10 years, because my dad really was the person that I felt was very affectionate with me growing up. He did not hit me, right? My mom was kind of, again, the disciplinarian with la chancla, like all of these other things. And then I realized last year, he was telling me that he only had to change my diaper once, right? He was like, I only had to change your diaper once and I did not enjoy the experience, so I never did it again. And I was like, what a luxury. No wonder my mom was like so stressed out, right? Because the support was not there. And so, I mean, like, no shade to my dad because he, you know, had his stuff growing up too. But I think that when we normalize those things, when we say like, this is just kind of how the men are, which again, is not just a Latinx problem. It's like every culture that encounters patriarchy has this problem too, where we go on accepting and taking it kind of from the men in our families. But when our mothers, I guess, are not given that support from their partners, if their partners are you know, males, that's going to create stress. That stress is going to have an impact on the relationship to the kids. And so that's the basic, right? That's just like stress equals disconnection most of the time. And if we don't talk about those things and we can't address it, we can't change it.
Right. Absolutely. So there was another post, you share so many good things. There was another thing that you shared that I want to talk about. This was somebody else's post that you shared. I think it's at Rant Mission. And the quote was, people don't want to see children liberated because then they must face the reality that their own childhoods were stolen from them, which is painful inner work to do in a world where we are all barely surviving. What stood out to you about that post?
I encounter quite a bit of resistance sometimes in the community. And I'll give an example. I have a cousin who I grew up with. I visited him and his siblings and his mom, his dad, my aunt and uncle in November on Thanksgiving. And I had this really beautiful picture of myself and him and my other cousin laughing when we were adolescents. I think he must have been like 10 and I was like maybe 12 or 13. And we had just gotten out of the pool and we're like laughing. And so my cousin has just gotten out of prison at this point in November when I approach him with this picture. And I'm like, I want to recreate this picture. And I'm so hopeful, right? Because I've been doing all this inner child work. And I'm just like, I want to recreate this picture with my inner child. I was so excited. And immediately he said, that doesn't exist anymore for me. And I was like, what do you mean? I still see him in you. Like, I still see, you know, this version of you. And he got really obviously upset by this idea that he was going to reconnect to this version of himself. It was just like, hell no, I'm not doing that. Like, he ended up kind of like storming away. And I was like, shoot, I didn't realize how that was going to come off. Like, you're my cousin, right? And so I'm not approaching a random person. It's like, you're my cousin. I thought that we had this relationship. And so it was very difficult for him. And it made me really reflect on how challenging, how impossible sometimes it feels to deal with the grief that comes up around our childhoods when everything around us is also adding grief to our lives, right? And we're not even able really to name that it's grief that's happening. So it's expressed in other ways, like anger, like, you know, depression, like significant anxiety, right? And it's like all of these things are caused by the inability to deal with some of the adversity that has happened, not just in our childhoods, but in our histories and still in our environment, right? Like, he's coming out of prison and I'm like, let's reconnect to your inner child. And he's like, F you. Like, that's not, like, I'm not there at all. And so I recognize that that is very much the case still. I mean, you know, when I talk about La Chancla, even there's people are like, wow, your page is so, you know, it's so big. I'm like, I'm looking at people like, you know, certain comedians that have made La Chancla jokes their whole business. They have like 2 million followers, 3 million followers. And I'm like over here with my dinky little, you know, En Chancla culture movement, which is amazing. Like, it really has grown beyond my expectations. And at the same time, I'm looking at this whole other paradigm that feels like the Goliath, right? And I'm like, we all have to start throwing stones at this, because if not, it's going to eat us alive. And you know, for me, it's been really empowering. But again, I've had the privilege. I've had the academic education. I went to school for child development. I did get, you know, corporal punishment, but not as bad as some of my cousins, right? I didn't have the same exact experiences. And so the ability for me to access that part of myself is and was and has been in some ways a lot easier than some other people in the community. And so it's not to discredit the hardship, but it is, again, just an invitation, right? It is just like a let's start to look at it, and let's just agree that we don't actually deserve violence. You know, we don't deserve for our bodies, our minds, our spirits, our hearts to be violated by, the wills, the whims of the adults in our lives or anybody that has power over us.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, when you hear people talk about this and saying like, well, I turned out fine, I'm okay, that's what we do. To me, it's like they have this lid so tight, you know, on what happened and what they had to kind of shut down and suppress to be able to tolerate that, especially if it was extreme and went on for long periods of time, that I, like you're saying, deeply empathize with people who cannot go there because they don't have the skills. But it really comes to this head where it's like, I can't be different with my own children. I can't change things in the future if I don't go there, because I can't see my child in that way without seeing myself. And I think anyone that has become a parent, you know, you start to see your childhood through this really crazy lens, and it's hard to keep that lid on when you have a little kid in front of you, you know?
Yeah, I feel so fortunate to be seeing the effects of the foundation that I've kind of laid for my oldest child, especially. She's really into Titanic right now. She's like obsessed with like 23-year-old Leonardo DiCaprio, which was also my reality when I was 11 and a half years old. And she was like, why do you like it so much? I'm like, honestly, because it makes me feel connected to you at the same time that it makes me feel connected to this version of myself that was, right? And so it's like, if we can bring those things together where it's like, my relationship to you is healing to the relationship that I have with myself, like that is really the goal that I have, you know? And it's not on them necessarily to be the guinea pigs or whatever for this relationship with myself, but it's a byproduct that happens. Like, as I've been focusing and really nurturing this relationship with my daughter, and I went through a separation last year, and it really has been a testament to the foundation again that I have laid for her, where she's navigating it pretty healthily, I would say, right? And she knows that I've always been transparent with her, and everything's kind of out on the table appropriately. Obviously, I'm not, you know, going into details that maybe she wouldn't be able to cope with, but I think for the most part, it does offer us that opportunity for our own healing. And that really has been what parenting has been for me, is that catalyst to look at myself and to say, what are the ways that I can be more intentional about the legacy that I'm leaving, not just for my kids, but for their kids and their children. And so it's hard, right? It's deeply challenging. A lot of wounds come to the surface, and I'm inviting that because I want to look at them, right? It's like with a wound is kind of where we know where to shine the light in. And I just have to make sure that I'm supported in that. And that's where therapy comes in. That's where friends who share the same language come in. That's where, you know, taking space when I need to comes in. That's where balance comes in. And so there's all these tools that we do have access to that I think a lot of people don't recognize that we have access to.
Yeah. And I think as I hear you talking, I hear how worth it has been for both you and your children, you know, to walk this path. And like, I think we can feel like questioning our culture or turning our back to certain things can feel like we're abandoning who we are, but it sounds like you've been able to get like even more in touch with your culture through this process, which I think is a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I think identity is so important for kids, right? For them to really know who they are. And I think for me, having had the experience of growing up in Mexican culture, being exposed to my family and all of the beauty and all of the, you know, kind of darkness that comes with that also. And then navigating this American culture, going to Catholic school my entire life, you know, really being exposed into the white world, I guess, you know, this, you know, very Catholic, very white, like, world. It was a lot to navigate in the formation of my identity, right? And so that to me is an ongoing process. And so for my kids, I want to make sure that they know that they are supported in that identity development, and that I am really confident in my identity as a Mexican American woman, as a Chicana, that I don't actually hold any resentment towards my parents, you know, for the things that they're not able to that they were not able to offer me. They're still hurt, but there's not like an active resentment against them, right? And so I think being able to communicate that with my kids, especially my older daughter, has been really important to me and has shown really positive outcomes so far.
That's great. Yeah, I think you're bringing up the point that like when we have context for our parents' behaviors and we're able to have understanding and also see like how we can move forward on our own and not put ourselves in the position to continuously be harmed, things can be a lot easier to carry. And like it's easier to be in that both and space. The last thing I wanted to know is, you know, for anyone listening, whether it's a therapist or, you know, a person, like, what do you want people to understand about the unique issues that Latinx families are dealing with right now in the world when it comes to parenting and breaking generational cycles in their families?
Yeah, there's so much. I mean, I'm so grateful because I'm able to work with a publisher right now. I'm writing the book around, you know, Chancla culture and kind of how to move through some of these dynamics. I'm so excited.
Amazing.
But I think the biggest thing that I feel parents need to know is that we have 500 years of colonization that has happened, right? And one of the chapters I'm writing, I'm like, something has happened. Like there has been a very, very enormous occurrence that has happened and has had this impact. And so I think as parents in my generation, those of us that have, you know, the ability to access information and to have conversations about this stuff, I think we place a lot of pressure on ourselves to break all the cycles in this lifetime. And
so true.
And I have felt that, you know, I've been like, oh my gosh, like I have to be completely the opposite, or I have to, you know, if I keep doing this, it's like I'm parenting from fear sometimes. It's like I'm so scared to do that to my kids. I'm so scared that my daughter will look at her phone and feel anxious when I call her, right? And so that fear isn't even necessarily out of complete fear. It's out of a love for what is to come or what I hope is to come, right? And so what I have to do is just plant the seeds. Like I just need to be able to plant the seeds to do what I can. I am navigating my own healing with my parenting, and I want parents to be so gentle on themselves in this part, and non-parents too, right? Because this is not just for parents, this is for anyone who has been a child and is on a healing journey. So my hope is that people kind of understand that this is one lifetime, right? That we don't have to break 500 years of colonization in the one lifetime. Like it's
yes, release the pressure,
find your community, you know, find people who are going to uplift you, who are going to just be that sounding board and that relationship. I love the idea, the concept of chosen family has been really huge for me, because there was grief that I experienced in not being able to, or not feeling like I wanted to expose my kids into a lot of the, you know, toxicity kind of that has happened in my extended family. And to be able to choose my family and to say, okay, these are cousins, right? Like these are aunts and uncles, because that was something that was beautiful in my culture growing up and having parties and really being with cousins. And now I don't really have that. I have one sister. Again, she lives in New York. I have a half brother who lives in Las Vegas, you know, 4 hours away. And I don't really have that for my kids. And so it's really empowering, or it has been really empowering for me to be able to find my community. And so I would encourage parents to be so gentle with themselves or anybody on this healing journey, and to find your community.
I love that. And I can so relate to you about the feeling like you have to break all the cycles. I think it's a function of like our work too. You're just like inundated with all these stories all day long about how things can go wrong. And you're like, I must not mess this up. So I get that. Well, I feel like we could talk all day. There's so many other things that I would like to ask you about. So I'm sure we'll do this again. But you mentioned a book. What else is next for you?
Yeah. So I also train professionals. So in addition to working with parents, I also work with therapists and teachers and anybody who really works with the Latino community. And so one of the goals that we have with that is to just, you know, give that cultural context, to give cultural sustenance, the ability to not just have cultural competence, but cultural sustenance, right? A deep humility for the people of a certain culture. And so I'm hoping that people will tap into our professional offerings. We have a training that we hold every March and every September that is 8 hours long. And we also, you know, I'm so excited and so grateful to have really amazing partnerships that we've developed where I'm able to provide direct service to parents, but then also train the professionals. So hoping that people will tap into that. And then obviously our offerings on our website, which is latinxparenting.org. I'm hoping people will check that out and follow us on Instagram.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for speaking with me. I think this is going to be a really helpful episode for so many people, and I appreciate it. Good luck with your book.
Thank you so much.